fry a buffalo in 40 seconds.
40 seconds? But I want it now.
Coaches, welcome back to the Talking Split Podcast. I'm Rob Calder, joining you again with Nick Mihai. Welcome, Nick.
Thanks for having me, Rob.
And Fernando Rios Rodriguez. Welcome, Nando.
Good to be here.
Great to have you both back in. Apologies for the no podcast last week. That was 100% a me fault in that I got sick. So, consequently, no podcast last week, but we will make up for it this week with a fantastic episode, I am sure. As a reminder, you can follow along on the Talking Split socials, at Talking Split on YouTube, on Instagram, on X. X has gone a little dormant. I say that every time. I keep meaning to shut that down and just forget to do it. But, you know, you can still follow along if you really want. You can send us a message on there. If you have any topics that you would like us to discuss or any coach shout-outs, you are more than welcome to send those through again. And we'll get onto that. We will probably have a mailbag episode, I think, next week. So we'll throw a story up on Instagram. If you've got any questions that you'd like answered, by all means, send them through and we'll get to those as soon as possible. The Uno incident, Nick. Like, you've just dropped this on me before we even started the pod. Like, I've now got curiosity about what's happened.
Well, I'll try and do a play-by-play for you. So we're all playing Uno at the Christmas party. Nando had one card left. And as it went, just before his turn, it was a flip and a reversal was played. But he still played the card, even though he was after it and it got the rotation went the other way. And, yeah, I called him out on it. And he claimed innocence, but we all knew what happened. The flip the reversal happened and you still tried to claim the win. So it's just, yeah, it was just a bit disappointing, to be honest. Like, I was just a little bit let down.
One of those. I'm not angry, I'm just disappointed.
Really? Yeah, correct. Yeah.
Now my side?
Sure, go for it.
Cool. Going to be my turn, and all of a sudden I'm like licking my lips, ready to go here, like I'm going to win this game. And then Mihai just goes, no, it was a reverse. And I was like, what? And I'm going to say it. Yeah, Catherine was next to me. She said, no, it was Nando's turn. And the whole group just flipped on me and said, no, it was a reverse. And I've never been so shook. It's opened my eyes on who you know, who to trust and whatnot, but and who's extremely competitive. But I was taken back a bit, and likewise, like, I'm not angry or anything, and it happened a couple months ago. But we'll go back to the drawing books and rehash it next Christmas.
Yeah, as long as you abide by the reversal rule. I think you'll be fine. You won't be as disappointed next time. So as long as you follow the rules of Uno, I think you'll be all right.
Yeah, there was a lot of yelling. Like, the volume levels definitely increased as well. There was a lot of passion.
You got busted. You got busted.
Similar, it's happening again now.
It is. You start.
You were like an emotional support dog or something.
And all the eyes. Like, it was just a nice little game, and then all the eyes in the room just went to us.
And exactly. I was like, and the reaction should show you that is unacceptable behaviour, just saying.
So no shock that coach has got too competitive an environment that is not supposed to be competitive.
And we had the referees there in that room and they weren't, like, officiating that. It was like, oh, where were you guys?
They were. They just weren't on your side. So that's what you're saying.
I'm glad that you two have managed to put this aside and reacquaint yourselves with the podcast this week. So the topic we're looking at this week is essentially the need for patience. And in particular, that but I want it now mentality. And, you know, no huge shocks of the Homer Simpson drop in the opener, but I think as coaches we are a victim to this. I think as players they are a victim of this. I think as parents they are victims of this. Clubs and associations, they are victims of this. This goes throughout the entire sport, and a lot of it revolves around feedback, I find, in that there's a lot of this time of year in particular. Like, selections are being made on various things. Everyone wants feedback on where they're at. And in a lot of cases, they don't want feedback. They want justification as to why what's happened. And in most cases, you could probably sit there and it's like, well, we chose this player over your child or yourself or whoever it is just because they're better. Like, and that's not enough. And we know that's not enough. Like, you need to give more detail than that as to what makes one better over the other and all those sorts of things. But it also comes down to coaches. So many times coaches get caught in this, oh, but I want to be an NBL, WNBL, Boomers, Opals coach right now. It's like, yep, we all want that right now. But the reality is you don't see the work that's gone on behind the scenes in that space of people that have those jobs and what that can potentially look like. So in a roundabout ways, this is a pod on feedback, on patience, on pathways, on just, you know, controlling the emotional state, I suppose, because we have And this is not anyone in particular, but we have had situations in the past where people have just thrown toys out of the cop because they haven't got what they wanted and left the sport altogether. And that's obviously not what we want as well. So I think this is, we'll talk around about it because we've all had similar sort of pathways without any of them being identical to the others. So we can talk about what it looks like for us on that end as well. But I mean, I suppose, Nando, we'll start with you before we reverse it to Nick. Little Ooh, Uno pun for you.
As long as he abides by the reversal rule, that's I'm fine.
Where do you see like the need for patience coming to the coaching side of things? So if we're going to talk coaches in particular, where do you see that need for patience?
First off, stripping it back to like, why do you want it now as well? And like, do you want it just because, or is it like, what is it that you really want to be at a high level? And I think sometimes, and you can relate this to players and coaches, where you like the idea of being at that high level, but the work required is sort of avoided at times. So why do you want to be that high level coach? And then like, what is your purpose and identity to go to the next level? So that's probably where I try to like break it down a little bit within coaches as well. It's always just nice to know like how far you've come. Like 2-3 years ago, I would never have pictured myself to be here. And I actually don't like looking too forward, because this industry specifically, it catches you out like when you least expected opportunities come. So you just need to have a positive mindset and growth mindset within everything you do. So the other thing I probably would like to say to coaches from an advice point of view is like, what are you willing to sacrifice as well? So this isn't just I'll do the one season then I'll go to the next, or I'll win that season, etc. There's so much more to it. So what are you willing to sacrifice from your end, from the family end? So many coaches I asked, can you help us out with an FDP, SDP? Let me check with my family is the first thing they'll generally say. So how much can you sacrifice there is really important too. So gone on a bit of a tangent, but yeah, there's a couple things to be able to note to start on how to be patient as a coach. And probably the last quote I probably have is just that comparison is a thief of joy. You got to make sure you're in your lane and you're not looking at anyone else's lanes. It's probably the only time where I probably have the blinders on and I've got my own journey to follow. So, yeah.
It's an interesting. I read something this morning and it was along the lines of, are you climbing the mountain just so people can see you on the mountain, or are you climbing the mountain to see the view? And it was a real like, stop doing what you think everyone else wants in that space. Like, don't. Because you have a coaching position or even a playing position, we'll seep into the playing side of things as well, I guess. But just because you have that position doesn't mean that is you. Like, that is not the authentic you, the only version of you. There are a lot of other things that make that up. And I think a lot of the times we can be, your comparison to the thief of joy is bang on the money. There's a lot of times we look at that person and say, why have they got that job? Why don't I have that job? I should have this job. I've had more success with them. Well, have you though? And that's the challenging part is, well, what you define as success may not be what others define as success in that space.
Yeah, I think their whole perception on this is a little bit warped. I think it comes down to a core belief that titles equal success. I have this title and I've been here, so I need to progress and I need to skip these coaches. It's not necessarily the case. Like, the success is in the work. Like, there's no secret. It's like when we talk to kids about shooting. Right? If we knew a shortcut or a secret, we'd just tell you, right? Like, we would say, this is how you can leapfrog everyone. But there isn't. You have to do reps and titles don't equal success. Like, you can't just carry them with you and say, oh, I'm in this position, so give me this job application, or this job, should I say. So I think it's just a core belief of, again, going back to what Nando said, why do you coach? What do you want to achieve out of it? What do you want to create? I think is a big one as well, is a way to keep you kind of grounded. I mean, the biggest thing that I feel I've reflected on is, how can I impact the roles I'm in and make those bigger? That's actually the progression I feel at the moment as well.
Yep, because there is that mentality, I think, of, okay, what's next? I've got this job, but now what's next for me?
Yeah.
Now I've got that job, what's next for me? And that can be really dangerous, I find. Like, the second you get your head turned by something else, that's when your standards slip, your habits start getting broken, those sorts of things start to come into it, and you stop caring about what you're doing and you start focusing on, well, what can I become? And there's nothing wrong with what can I become as a mentality, I think, in that space. But do a good job where you are is just such a big part of it, and it's noticed. Like, it's we get asked for coaching recommendations all the time through here. Now, whether it be for things like FDP, those types of things, whether it be from an association saying, hey, look, we want to bring this person on as a coordinator, whether it be just a club saying, look, you know, do you know anything about this coach that you can give us? I can promise you the first thing that comes out of their mouth is not how often they win. Like, it is, are they a good person or not?
Yep.
And usually it's like, hey, they're not a great person. They might win a lot, but they're not a great person in that sort of space. And like, we'll double down on that because it is genuinely a case of, is this person a good culture fit for what that role entails? And every role is so different, whether you be like coordinator, head coach, assistant coach, whatever the case might be, it's going to be a little bit different. But it genuinely comes down to, are you a good person? And it's amazing how many people are great coaches but can't get coaching jobs. And it's like, well, there's got to be a reason for that. Like, that can't be coincidence. We all need good coaches, but why?
And that's at the highest level as well. Josh King is a good person. Dean Vickerman is a good person. Why? Because they've done the work. Dean Vickerman was in the Jamboree, correct me if I'm wrong, he but he did the Jamboree, worked all his way up. I think he's on the wall at Bendigo.
He is.
Right? He's done the work. Everyone's saying, oh, I wish I had that job. No one saw about the previous 25 years or whatever it was that he was working his way up into that.
Absolutely. And just the humility involved in it too. Like, the amount of times, and I think Vic Country do a really good job of this, in all honesty, of having people that have been in the program for such a long time, come back. And they don't always come back as, I need to be the person in charge. In a lot of cases, they come back in as a mentor. And they sort of sit behind someone, they do some work, they put out some fires along the way that probably the head coach doesn't even know are happening at that point. But that straight away, it's like, well, there's the value. Like, you don't even realize they're helping you a lot of the time.
And I'll probably piggyback on that in regards to the country coaches that do so many unseen work and hours for their players. I thought I knew, but being in this role and networking with these really rural regions, it's been mind-blowing to see the effect they have. I remember contacting when I was going to make a hub visit, the hub lead saying, hey, I'd like to work out two individuals. Can we see if we can get a stadium? More than happy to cover the cost. No worries, mate. I'll open up for you. Like, that's the way they operate. It's a little bit different in country, but just that, yep, I'll get it done. So many other mini hubs, I'd almost say, of there are network coaches that are working country kids out of love because they cannot get to their SDP sessions because it's too far. They open up the stadium and they do shooting sessions. We send them the plans. Like, it's yeah, really mind-blowing to see that care is there, and hence why it motivates myself and the team to be able to provide these shooting sessions and sending them plans to all the network coaches. So them people, when they reach out, like, we're dialed in when they reach out. We know that there's purpose. You know, you want to be known for that. You don't want to be known for being the coach that can get caught, and potentially we've all done it at times where we're almost boosting our own ego and you're almost trying to let, you know, other people know the good stuff you've done. Be careful of that, because the good stuff that you've done, it'll be seen. Yes, there will be times where people don't see it, but it'll be seen eventually if you're able to do it as a habit and as a person. And that's when you say the good people. When we appoint FDP, SDP coaches, it's definitely good people first, as well as who can we trust? Not who you know, because we know a lot of coaches, but who can we trust is so important. Trust to do the job from a knowledge point of view, trust to do to have difficult conversations and confidential conversations when it comes to with clubs and whatnot. So yeah, definitely that culture aspect within Vic Country we're super grateful of. And then when you mention coaches getting higher jobs than other coaches, maybe they've got that higher job, but maybe the culture or the season isn't actually going as well. Like, maybe they're not seeing eye to eye from a board level, and the board maybe needed to just appoint someone. Like, there's so much more to it. Like, don't just chase.
It could be as simple as they knew someone. Like that just happens.
Oh,
just
opens doors.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. I just knew this person. That's how I got, you know. Mm-hmm. So don't overthink it and overanalyze it. Absolutely. That's the worst thing you can do.
No, but it happens a lot. And even the actual hours of coaching actually aren't that bad. Like when you put it in sort of context, it's like, look, can you turn up and take an hour long training session or an hour and a half training session? It's like, yeah, sure. Like no worries. Mm. Can you take a game? No problems. Like the difficult part is the planning before the session, the review after the session, because they're the hours that nobody sees. Yep. You bang on, Nando. Like nobody sees someone spending an hour trying to put together a session plan and those sorts of things. And nobody sees the amount of fires you have to put out as a coach over the course, whether it be playing time, whether it be, hey, I can't get this kid to connect in this team for whatever reason. Like something's just not quite clicking. And it's the drive. Mm-hmm. Like you go over that stuff and that impacts somewhere else. So the actual coaching hours actually aren't that bad. Like the hours in which you have to coach probably aren't always 8 or, I mean, that can be 6 o'clock in the morning, that can be 9 o'clock at night, those sorts of things. But any coach that's probably got anywhere with their coaching has done a lot of work for free. Mm-hmm. And that's the reality of it. Now, whether it should happen or not, different argument altogether. But I mean, I remember like when I was first sort of starting out in the Basketball Victoria space, I was doing 4 mornings a week of ITC, it was called at that stage.
Yep.
I was the one responsible for opening up the gym in a couple of those places as well, which always stressed me out and gave me worse night's sleep because I was always paranoid about, will I sleep in? There's going to be like 30-something kids out the front of the gym saying, where's Rob? Like that freaked me out. But the amount of work that goes into it, like volunteer coaches, I understand why they want to progress because – in a lot of cases, they've done a lot of work, but so's everyone else.
Yep.
Like, please don't think you're the only one, because for every one, there's another 12 that are doing that same level of work that you have to be really conscious of. Yep. And that, you know, it is just a long game. Like, that's the reality. Like, everyone wants to climb the mountain real quick.
Yep.
But that doesn't actually make you a better coach. Like, it is honestly the years in the trenches where you have a team that isn't as good as the team that you wanted, that you've got to try and find a way to develop and you know, progress and those sorts of things. It's doing the unseen stuff that makes you a better coach.
100%.
Yeah, to a bigger point as well, like we have a lot of coaches in VJBL that go, I want to be a first-team coach. Yep. So they get disappointed when they get like the threes. It doesn't mean that they're not progressing as a coach either, right? It doesn't mean, hey, you're not ready for this. There might be a reason why the BDM or the DOC is putting you in that position to develop these players. Maybe they do see progression from you. They see you as a developer. Like so really try to look at things objectively as well. Just because you don't get a first team, quote unquote, like sometimes some of these teams that I'm seeing, they just manage themselves, right? Like they're so loaded. Mm-hmm. Yep. They're just going to win whether you just rock up to sub. So does that help your development as a coach? Probably not, right? So they're probably putting you in a position where you can coach a little bit more. Who knows? Like, so just don't think of it as just like, I'm not progressing into the first team, so, and I need to get there. That's not always necessarily the case.
And just bringing it back to like when you say the amount of coaches we have, like we have 154 FDP coaches in Country Victoria. We have 74 coaches for SDP. It's a lot of coaches on a regular weekly basis.
Yep. Some will double up and do it.
And that's not including our state coaches. And then when you say the sacrifice you made in the mornings, if you, for example, myself, me in the 18s campaign right now, that's another anywhere from 8 to 12 hours a week. So when you say you want to be a state coach, what are you sacrificing away? Because you can't just continue to add. That's 8 to 12 hours a week. We've got a Sunday training for 6 hours. We've got film review. We catch up. We're catching up with the head coach this afternoon about session plans. Like it's, and yes, you may not be present in a training, but if you're thinking about the 18s or if you're thinking about like your trainings, that still counts as time. Mm-hmm. And then probably just the other thing is like being very cautious, and a lot of coaches do it, where they say, yep, I'm free on Sunday. I can do it. Are you free and are you going to be 100% available energy-wise? Because you can be there as an assistant and sit there and stand and whatnot, but are you going to be valuable? And something I've been caught out probably at the beginning of my sort of coaching journey is just making sure that if I'm going to attend, I'm going to be there and I'm going to be present. Because a lot of the times we get caught up and say, yep, I just need to rock up. I'm not leading it, but you need to be in attendance present.
That's a big one, what you're talking about.
Yep.
Right? Because I feel like Yeah, there's a lot of that happening at the moment where coaches will rock up and just go, well, I'm here, so that's fine. Yeah, that's a really important one that you brought up.
And it hurts, like, especially if it's your first year in a stay campaign and you're saying, all right, I'm still going to do my rep coaching, I'm still going to do university work, I'll still add the shifts on, like, I'm just doing state, I'm only the development coach, I'm only an assistant coach. It's not like that. If anything, it's like the year you have to prove yourself, because it can slip away from you. It's not, okay, and then I'll get the AC job. It doesn't work like that, is probably my best advice from that point.
Yeah, and it's a really valid point you make, I think, because I mean, I remember when I first started in the state program, necessarily was a development coach 1 year with Vic Metro. We won fairly comfortably. Next year, didn't even get the job back. And it's like, immediately, it's like, what the hell? Like, we were clearly good, but it was also a little bit of a test of, okay, you've had a taste of it, go away, put some work into yourself and try and come back. And it was a real sort of critical moment for me of, do I want to invest in this, or have I had my taste and that's enough for me? And it was a case of, I wanted to invest. So shelved a lot of other things that were going on in my life at that stage. Like, I was a regular cricket player. Like, no, not doing that anymore. Like, that's gone. I'm going to make sure I get to training sessions on a Saturday afternoon. I'm going to volunteer my time at this. Hey, we need someone to film this game. No worries, I'll be there. Like, it was that sort of thing. That was a sacrifice I made. And there were friendships and relationships I lost out of that, because now I don't see them anymore. Or, you know, we'll exchange texts every now and again, but that's kind of it. But that was the sacrifice I made at the time to chase something that I wanted.
Yep.
By the same token. And, you know, 2 or 3 years later, I was back involved in state teams and those sorts of things. Like, I still went along as a volunteer and filmed games all week and those sorts of things, even when I wasn't on staff. But that was a conscious decision. And understanding that can't be done for everyone. Like, if you have a family and those sorts of things that demand your attention, completely get why you wouldn't. But there are other ways in which you can contribute too in that sort of space. Like, you know, when there is something in your town, can you get to it? If you do have a free weekend, are you available to jump in and coach? Because the other danger of, similar to what you're talking about, Nando, is if you turn up and you're just there, it's very easy to get tarred with that brush.
Yes.
Of, hey, they turn up all the time, but we don't actually know if they can coach or if they do anything, because they just literally stand there and don't do anything. They stand there and talk, and you know that can be just as disruptive, and that's a really hard reputation to get rid of, I think, for a lot of coaches too. So you've got to be really careful as to what that potentially looks like, because I mean, with everything, like you spoke about it before, Nick, like, okay, I wanted a first team. No worries. Are you prepared for the pressure that comes with having a first team? And we're sitting just in the same room as someone that's only just recently qualified for VC, and he's a much happier man now than he was prior to Christmas, it'd be fair to say.
Very different, like, conversation,
Some of the Saturday mornings we rocked up for sessions, it was,
you know, they were rough.
We had 5 of the 6 numbers for Beyond Blue dial. Like, we weren't really too sure. Like, he was not in a great space, but there is pressure that comes with that, whether it be external or internal, because they both are there. Like, externally, the club and the association wants you to qualify for the highest level and all those sorts of things. But internally, you feel the heat of that thing of like, hey, I haven't qualified yet. Like, now what? Like, is this my fault? Like, is this, like, what's happened? Have we just got a bad pull? You know, then you get, like, your pull, and it's like, oh, that's not going to go super well. Then you get your post-Christmas pull and you're just like, fingers crossed for everything coming through on that one as well. But that's the level of pressure. Like, in a lot of cases, that can actually take the joy out of coaching.
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
When you become so outcome focused that you're actually not thinking about, do I enjoy this? Like, do I really enjoy making that player better? Do I love, like, trying to teach this type of thing for these players? Like, that can sap the joy out of it so quickly. And, you know, talking to a lot of coaches, and you're in this position, Nick, because you're the youth league coach. Like, you're third in line. Yeah, ultimately, 100%. When it comes down to it, like, NBL 1 comes first. Their 18s team probably comes first in that, or their 20s team, depending on how your program structures.
College.
And potentially fourth, because you've also got a lot of kids that are either going through first couple of years of uni or last couple of years of year 12. So you're not a priority when you look at it in the grand scheme of things.
Correct.
That's hard to deal with, because it can get to the point where it's like, I'm giving up all this time and energy and everything, and I'm not being met with it at the same space.
Big time. Like, when we talk to players, like, it's funny, right? We're like, hey, you want to be a pro, you've got to get this amount of shots up per day. And they're like, cool, I work night shift. Okay. So
it's going to be hard.
It's going to be quite difficult for you to get shots up. So like, the reality of it is, people want these positions, but you're right. It's like, most of what I've done so far is just having conversations with players, and some of them are difficult. And some of them have to be a little bit direct without being rude or you know, confrontational or anything like that. They're very difficult conversations to have. These are the things that happen. It's when you get on the court, like 90% of it's done, right? That's it. You know, and just to go back to even the 18s boys, that's difficult. They're learning this stuff for the first time. Some of them are learning, hey, that player's a little bit better than me, so I'm going to get significantly less minutes. But I've been the man at this, let's say, domestic club this whole time. So how do I deal with that? So you're dealing with all those emotions. And then on top of that, with juniors, especially first teams and bigger clubs, they're going to state trials and things like that. So they start to create their own just because they're getting older. Oh, pecking order, right? Like I'm here and you're here. And it's difficult. All these things is what happens in the background. Are you ready to do that? Or ready to learn from it?
You don't end up coaching your own team because you're missing kids that have gone to something else, whether they've had school basketball on that they have to be at, or you know, they potentially have made a state team, in which case they're a state practice, and it's like, well, okay, I'm not even coaching the kids I thought I was coaching anymore. I'm coaching the rest of my team, which is fine. Like, there's no issue. Like, it's good to get them more attention in that space, but sometimes it's not what you think it is either.
100%. And when you speak about the pressure side of things, definitely like felt it in the 18s. And when you dig deep a little bit more on the pressure, it's 90% of the time on yourself. Like, it's coming from yourself. It's not the others or anything like that. It's that, that bar you set on yourself. So 100%. Making sure that, I believe I mentioned it last time, like keeping your circle tight and making sure you're talking to people who have your best interests as well. And you know, even felt it first, the second week of Jan in Albury Cup. Like that was a really good team we had in the Gold Miners. And we got a whack. We got a massive punch to the face against New South Wales. But again, which is probably like leads on to the next thing, like your response is everything. So making sure how you respond is effective, and we were able to have that opportunity again to see them in the finals and adjust. So yeah, making just with response, like you don't get a ones gig, don't throw in the towel. Don't be that coach that just throws it in. Make sure you're taking on the feedback and actually implementing it. That's the one thing I really loved about the Albury Cup. Like, I got feedback, like pages of feedback. But then in 2 hours' time, I was able to execute it again. So that was like the beauty of it. Like, I didn't have to wait for Friday to come around again. I got to wait like 2 hours or, you know, the next day to go and implement it, and you could really see it. So that was really beneficial. But just making sure, like the pressure side of things, majority of the times it's by yourself. And I'm pretty sure a mentor came up to me, even if it was like last year, and said, like, majority of the times they're going to forget what you came or, you know, whatnot. So don't stress about where you finish. Just worry about your goals and your outcomes.
I can't even remember what I finished. The last 18 season, that was only like a year ago.
That's what I mean. So
I have no idea.
It's regular, though. But that's a big part of, like, it's amazing how many times a coach will say, oh, is this coach doing a good job this year? And so, well, I don't know. Like, let's talk at the end of the year. Like, it doesn't matter where they're at now. That might have been a building block of potentially 3 months to get to this point in time where they can now start to make some inroads. Like, and that's the challenge, I think, is everyone wants to go from zero to 100 so quickly.
Yeah.
I get it. We've all done it. Like, we've all wanted our team to be further along than where they are at any given point in time. We've all done that.
Yep.
But the patience required to get to that point, and sometimes the sacrifices you have to make along the way, and it's like, well, look, maybe we do need to lose this game to learn a lesson. Like, that is a big part of it that not everyone is prepared to do, and our egos can get in the way of that. Like, we know that. Like, it's regular that it's like, I don't want to lose to that coach, so screw it. I am going to shortcut to this a little bit.
Or it's an expectation. You are expected to win. You're actually not, by the way.
Like, exactly. But, I mean, some of the things you see is you'll shorten rotations.
Yep.
And the opportunity to get players in and get them meaningful minutes goes away because you've made it about you down your end rather than what's going on down the other end. Like, that is one that I see continually. And I was talking to a coach maybe 2 weeks ago, went and watched their game. I'm like, you do realize that three of your kids did not play. Like, no, they got on. I'm like, no. I know they got on. But they did not play. You gave them like 30, 45 seconds and you pulled them out straight away because they made a mistake. And then you just left them there. Like, if you're going to pull them out because they made a mistake, no worries. Address it. Get them back in. Mm. Oh, but, I wanted to win this game. And it's like, look, I get it. We've all been there. But by the same token, that cannot be what validates you doing a good job as a coach, because now you run the risk of those three kids turning the other way and going, oh, you know, this coach tells me they're all about development. You know, I hear about the long term and doing the right thing. I haven't seen that. And now you've got to try and rectify that, which again takes up time, and rightly so. So you do have to be really careful with that. And it also gets down to let your players fail.
Yep.
Like, let them make mistakes. Let them – you've got to be really careful of guiding your players versus interfering with your players. And so many times the game will teach you what's right and what's wrong in that sort of space. The only way they're going to experience that is by being on the court to experience that. And that could be in a game situation, but it also could be a training. Like, can you recreate a scenario that you saw in the game last week that you can now see again now and let them try and figure it out again? But if you overcoach everything, you're actually depriving them of the opportunity to try and figure it out for themselves.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. And it's difficult, because I'm also critical of coaches that don't coach and just, you guys figure it out yourselves. And, I'm not going to tell you what's supposed to happen. It's like, well, sometimes you have to as the coach. Mm.
That's what I was going to say, the other end. I have a problem with more the other end. The timeout coaches you're talking about, right? They only coach when there's a timeout. Yep. There's so much happening on the floor. Like, you only have five timeouts, I think. Juniors.
Give or take.
Thereabouts. Right? That's not a lot. So, what's happening in between that? They need some guidance. They need some instruction. But you also can't go too far. It's that balance, isn't it?
Yeah, don't be the remote controller coach.
Yeah.
Pass it, dribble it, shoot it. Come on, do that. Yeah. It's too much. That's going to be an issue for you. So giving that direction, I think, is an important part of it. Thinking that structure is the fix-all to all your problems. It's a great masking agent, but it will not fix your problems.
Yeah.
We see it continually in that you turn up to a training session, it's like, we're just going through our baseline plays. Plays? What do you mean plays? Multiple? You've got more than probably one. You don't need more than one. It's have one with a wrinkle. That's kind of all you need in that sort of situation. It's structure will solve you some problems for sure, but does it actually make them better? And this is kind of the thing I talk to coaches about all the time. It's like, when should I put an offense in? I'm like, hold out as long as you can. If you don't need one, don't put one in. But every other team's got one. Yep, they probably do. And how much time have they spent doing that and learning that compared to how much time have you spent on skill development and decision making and those sorts of things that, doesn't always show up on a scoreboard. Nope. Let's face it, that's difficult at times. So it's the structure thing, I think, it's kind of like the junk food. It'll make you feel really good at the time, but it doesn't necessarily equate to anything down the road somewhere.
Yeah, well, we say for our players, when we present and do our review, who's getting in their vitamins. Vitamins meaning your skill development. And we had a real big issue, specifically in the phase one and then towards the start of phase two within our post and our touch around the rim with our posts, to the point where I believe we had 37% layup percentage. That's tough.
Yeah. What was your offensive rebounding like?
Yeah.
Because you had opportunities, as it turns out.
Yeah. But, we really played an emphasis on our post to be able to get some more touches. And we highlighted just last night our post was able to get 80% from the field goal percentage. That was awesome. It was probably a guy that was coming off the bench and clearly putting in vitamins and work into his game. So that's something we like to spread amongst and make sure we're calling that out as well.
Yep.
It's funny you say about not having too much going on within your coaching, and I sent my game to Mihai, and he was able to give me some feedback, specifically in my last game in grading phase. And the reason why I did it was to just get another perspective outside the club, as well as what am I looking as from a coach, and what do you see from my team from a different lens? You have no idea what I'm running, but what is it? And the first thing he said, which touched me, was what's your identity? What do you want to be known as right now? Because I don't have that clarity. And it's that made so much sense. It was so simple, but it was I've thrown a lot, and you generally do that in a grading phase. Yep. When you're trying to do stuff, you're trying to do as much as possible,
and squeeze it in. But
that really stuck with me, and we've come up with our 2 point, or 1 point for an offense and a defensive point, and it's repeated every single time we're on the floor. But that's just advice as well from a coach perspective. Like, it doesn't always have to come from your club. It can come from a different perspective, which is really important.
Yeah, we all want to work together. We want to make the game better, right? Like, we'll, you know, I guarantee you I'll be sending some film to you guys as well, just a heads up. So,
yeah, my auto forwards are still on. It'll come back to
you. It's going
to
come back to me, yeah.
Out of office.
Yeah, yeah, exactly right. But, I mean, that is part of it too, though. Like, you want to go and find out what other people think of you coaching. And it doesn't mean you have to take everything on board, because that is a part of it too. You've got to be a little bit selective, and, you know, you can't take it all on board, because now you are, again, probably losing your identity and you're becoming someone else's identity in that space. But it's the ability to kind of work out, okay, what do I need right now? What is what I need now? What is going to be what I need in 6 weeks' time? And sometimes you're going to have to sacrifice a bit of the now for the 6 weeks' time. And that hurts. But, you know, we don't really have access to our kids long enough to be able to do the daily training environment type stuff that a lot of others, you know, around the world potentially get to do. So we have to be really conscious about how we use our time effectively. And it's, in all honesty, for coaches that are looking to progress in their own pathway and whatever it is, just do the right thing.
Yep.
Like, which sounds so fickle and insincere, but it is genuinely a case of, are you doing the right thing? Great. You'll get rewarded for it. Yep. It may not be in the way you want or in the time frame that you want, but ultimately you will be rewarded for it. And it is, like a coach asked me for some advice not too long ago. I'm like, mate, just don't make dumb mistakes. Like, when, you know, this, and they were a young coach when they were talking about, you know, their pathway and all that sort of stuff. And it's like, mate, you've been presented with two options. You know which options you should take. Like, I don't need to tell you which one. Like, you know which one you should take. Which one is going to serve you better in the long run? They're like, oh, the one I don't want to do now. It's like, exactly.
It's like Dwight Schrute. Don't be an idiot. Live by it every day.
Yeah, well,
that's the best advice he gave me.
It's fairly simple, but it is one of those things. It's like, we all know, like, when we see it, like, Friday nights, like, as a bit of an insight into everyday life in the office, Nick's Mondays have now become what Rob's Mondays used to look like, was you get sent all the zone complaints.
Yes. Oh, man, I was going to ask if I can do the Rob's rant this week.
But, you know, what everyone's doing now is, it's like, oh, we're playing matchup with four of these players, but that one player at the back, oh, no, they're just standing on the charge circle. It's like, look, that's still a zone. Like, that player, like, all five players need to be in a position where they're guarding the ball. We know what that looks like. And a lot of the time, it is far harder to call that one player out as the coach and say, hey, you need to go and defend the ball out there, because you know they're probably not going to be quick enough. They're probably not going to be strong enough. It's not in their comfort zone. You know you're going to sacrifice a little bit of short-term pain for that, but the long-term payoff is that kid gets better defensively. The hard thing to do is highlight that. The real easy thing to do is, oh, ball pressure, ball pressure, ball pressure. And it's like, yeah, but the one kid that should be pressuring the ball isn't pressuring the ball, because you're not addressing that one. So that is a real part of, you know, you're worried more about the win rather than you are the development side of things.
100%. And how does it help the player in 2-3 seasons? Because go play that defense against Nando in 18s. Four-player matchup with one under the basket. Like, you know what I mean? Like, it's
well, it might be genius if they shoot 37% from the
layup. Yeah, right?
Come on, Nick. Don't give him all ideas.
Don't give him ideas. It's like a reverse box in one. I just don't understand. Like, yeah, I do understand, actually. Yeah,
you know what happens.
But I don't understand, like, why you wouldn't. For me, maybe because it's, I've coached a few seasons, the greatest honour is like when kids make, like, Australian teams or state teams, and I'm like, cool.
It has to be that when they go up a team.
Yeah, they go. Like, yeah,
you know, they go from, you know, 14-3s to 14-2s. Like, great result.
So true.
Like,
yeah,
you know, that's the kid that clearly wants it and works for it and those sorts of things too. But it is a genuine thing. Do the right thing, and it's amazing. I mean, you spoke about it before, Nando. People recognize it.
Oh yeah.
It's not always highlighted, but people recognize it. And the amount of conversations we have around coaching, in particular, where it's like, hey, that person did a really good job. It's like, they lost by 40. It's like, nah, that's not the point. Like, they've only just inherited that team. They've had them for 30 seconds. They are a good coach. Like, yeah. I listen to how they talk, what they say, their tone, their mannerisms. Good coach in that space.
It doesn't, yeah, like the results, yes, it's up and down, but the development's the most important part. I remember playing Jack White in the Classic. Yep. And we beat him by 40. He turned out okay.
Yeah, no, he was fine.
He did fine. Turns out he did all right still. Yeah. Right? Like,
probably the biggest emphasis I'd like to put in as well with that is making sure you're not bringing down any other coaches within when you're sort of going for that pathway.
If you're, to elevate yourself.
Yeah, yeah. It's been something that's I've seen a little bit as well, and it's just so dangerous, in my opinion, to do that. Like, don't be that coach that talks ill of another coach because they've done X, Y, Z. Avoid that at all costs, because it actually paints an image on you and how you're speaking of other people, because the immediate thing, I think, instantly is, oh, I wonder what you're saying about me as well. But at the same time, your focus isn't there. Like, your focus isn't on your game. You've focused on the other coach's game, which is just super important. And in my mindset, specifically being in FDP and SDP, you know, regardless of it being in club land, like, if you get better, we all get better.
Mm.
Like, yeah, we're probably going to verse Bendigo or Ballarat on a Friday night, regardless. Like, if them kids are getting better, we're all getting better collectively for Country Victoria. And we need to make sure we have that mindset. Like, we were just at Country Champs, which is awesome, and seeing the talent of coaches and whatnot. You know, you guys are going to go at it when it comes to games and whatnot. But, you know, in a couple – this week's time, we've got All-State Camp, and we're together. So it's just making sure that message of staying together and learning and growing together. There's a lot of coaches who are doing it as well that are getting on Zoom calls that I'm hearing of and teaching each other some stuff to be able to learn and grow. But just being really mindful of how you're speaking of other people, because the next thing you know, you get on a state bench and you're with that coach on that bench, and you're two ACs together potentially. Like, just be very cautious, because the basketball world works in a funny way. So yeah,
you lose your network. Like, it's people start to step away from you when you start to do that. I think it's a really good point as well. I think it comes down to insecurity, to be honest.
Yep.
I think you're insecure, and it's easier to have a go at another coach than it is to reflect on yourself, which is very confronting when you are as a coach. Right, after a while, you kind of just get used to it, don't you, Rob? But anyway, yeah, you're just like kind of like, all right, hit me.
Just, well, it's more like, you just assume everyone's talking about you. Like, yeah. It's just easier to.
I had Chloe ring me the other week about a game. I'm like, all right, mate, give it to me. Like, yeah. I'm ready.
I mean, the tall poppy stuff is real. Like, and I know Zoe's spoken about it on the pod before. Like, people feel like the way for them to progress is to drag others down, and it's. Clearly, I was looking at a lot of mountain-related motivation this morning, because another one that I saw was like, I helped someone climb the mountain and got to enjoy the view as well.
And it's that's like, cool. Bang I on. Like that.
Like, that is just so appropriate to what it looks like. Like, help others get better. You will get better because of that, because they will continue to return the favor or invest in you and work together in that sort of space. So I cannot stress that enough, because believe it or not, the rumor mill is always going in basketball. Like, it's, and I think I've got better at it over the years, of like 98% of what I hear isn't true. Yep. It's just someone that's gone and put a different spin on it, and it's like, nope, not even bothering with that one. Don't be a part of it. Mm-hmm. Like, it's the greatest advice I can give coaches, is to stay out of the politics.
Yep.
Like, if you don't need to be involved in there, don't be involved in there.
I was like that early on as well. 98% of it was false, what was told to me. And then I was like, I just stopped listening to everything. I just nod my head now. Okay. Mm-hmm. And just leave it there, because it's so much crap that gets spread around. And I don't know what, like, correct me if I'm wrong, but I feel like referees don't do it. Players don't really do it. They kind of go the coach a little bit really more. They don't really slang each other up. But we, for some reason, are still in that environment. Like, it's just, I think we've gotten better. I think there's less.
Yes.
Yep.
Right? But I think it's still there. I don't know. I'd love just these days just calling coaches, talking hoops. Hey, I tried this action. It was really cool.
100%.
Like, sharing. And these days, if someone starts saying something to me about another coach, I just change the subject without making it obvious.
Yep. No, I really like it. But we'll flip over to the player side of things, because this is obviously a big part of what we deal with as well in coaching. And not everyone progresses at the rate they want to progress. And we see it a lot in that there are plenty of players that have success early, but they're usually the early developers that have that success early. And it doesn't always pan out. Mm-hmm. Whereas the little raw, scrawny kid that, you know, is an early is a late developer that gets no traction early with any of the teams, has to build a little bit of resilience about them. It's like, hey, I'm not getting what I want. What have I got to do now? I've got to go away and I've got to work at this, and I've got to continue to put the hours in. Then they get that little bit of a growth spurt later and it works. Now, that's not universal for everyone, of course. Like, some people are blessed to be 5'4", and that's just what they are. there's nothing you can do about it that you, Nando? Like,
no,
yeah,
no. I've got the Vomeros on today.
So. Oh, very good. Yeah. Up to 5'5". Like, it's fantastic. So it's like, it, but it is one of those things, too, that not everyone's path will be the same. So, and then that relates, I think, from the coaching side of things. But just because you're in the higher team doesn't mean you're the better player. You might just be the better fit in that space. Or just because you're not in that team doesn't mean you're not good enough to be. You might not be what they're after at that point in time. And like, I'm a big believer in miss out on some stuff. Like, it's, you know, build that level of resilience, build that little bit of a chip on the shoulder at times. But it's, and look, whilst that's maybe not healthy motivation to, you know, go all in on I hate everyone and that's the word. Sometimes that can get you out of some spots where it's like, no, I am going to find I'm going to dig a little bit deeper here and this is what's going to motivate me. Fine. Whatever motivates you, you're all good with that. But you do have to be really careful of comparing in juniors in particular. Seniors is probably a little bit different because everyone's on a fairly even playing field by that stage. But I think juniors, that's where it can be really dangerous.
Absolutely.
For a lot of their players.
I think on top of that, the answer is not getting three different skills trainers. Just to be really clear, I'm hearing a bit of that. You know, I go to this skill trainer on a Monday, I go to this one on a Wednesday, I go to this one on a Friday. Like, it piggybacks a little bit with the coaches, right? Saying yes to everything. Eventually you're going to hit a point where you're going to have to sacrifice something as well. And if you are going to all those skills trainers and filling up your week, you're sacrificing the development that you could be working on your own. And that is actually really important. And that's the work that no one sees, similar to coaching. We don't see the form shots you're taking at home and the dribbling and the passing or whatever drills you're doing in your driveway. So it's a very important thing that we can't lose. And I think we are losing it a bit because there's so many availability with stadiums and there's more and more skill trainers coming in. But my advice would be to just do your research on one and pick one, do one a week, work on that. And then come back if that's what you want to do as a development. But be patient as well. That doesn't mean you're going to go from a fours to a ones just because overnight. You're doing skill. Yeah, correct. Think of the long game.
Yeah.
Right? Well, and it is. Like, and ultimately, technique and fundamentals will save you. That's what it really comes down to. There are very few kids that I look at in under 18 that are fundamentally sound and go, nah, they're not really right for this. Usually they get picked.
Yep.
Yeah. Like, it just works that way, that the fundamentals are the fundamentals for a reason. Go and work on them. Like, go and lie on your bed and form shoot to yourself, like when you're lying on your back. Yep. Like, get used to what the ball has to look like coming out of your hands. Get used to all of that sort of stuff. Because it's the boring stuff that gets you better.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm.
Like, it sucks. But
Josh Giddey was like 6 foot, like in bottom age 16s. Like,
yeah,
I wouldn't say he was athletic, right? But his fundamental skills were phenomenal. Like, his IQ, his ability to dribble with both hands. He's lucky too, right? Like, he grew eventually. Like, he really shot up. But, you know, that's what got him through it. Like, it's his fundamentals, his ability to move his feet appropriately, shoot the ball, pass both hands. Like, these are the things you can work on at home easily.
Yeah, comfortably. And, for mine, again, habits will get you into that. Like, if you know that at Monday at 4 o'clock, that's what you do, go do it. Like, don't miss a session. Like, get into that space and get that little bit of sort of hardness about you. Like, doing uncomfortable things will make you better.
100%.
Like, living in the world of comfort, I'm a strong believer, doesn't get you any better. But doing stuff that is going to test you mentally and physically, that's where you get your edge.
Yeah.
I kind of find, and like, it's one thing I'm big on. Everyone wants an opportunity. Oh, just give them a chance. Just give them a chance. Like, well, sometimes they're not ready for that chance when it comes along. Like, if you happen to be on the side of the court when someone needs an extra player for pickup, but you're miles off that mark, well, you're not ready for that chance. That's a difficult, like, have a crack, sure, but don't be disappointed with the outcome.
Absolutely.
Difficult, like, and I understand it, but, you know, but then, like, if you are one of those underdeveloped players physically more than anything else, what can you do that is going to set you apart from everyone else? And the biggest thing is body language.
Yep.
Like, body language and being a good teammate will get you picked on every single team. And it's amazing how often it's like, oh, look, we've got one spot swinging. We don't really know which way to go. You know, we could go that kid over there. We could go that kid over there. Or we could just go that kid that's always happy that everyone really likes. And it's like, I'll take the happy kid any day of the week.
Mm-hmm.
Absolutely. Like,
incredible how often that works out.
Mel Downer has such a good quote. You can pass on good players. You can't pass on good people. Mm. And it's just such an important thing, right? Like, there's how many, like, VC championship winning teams. Like, traditionally, there's always that one or two kid that's just makes the other three or four players on the court better. Boy, yeah.
Who starts their best five kids?
Yeah.
Very few teams. Like, they'll normally go three and two guys where it's like, oh, I feel like we can help off them. It's like, yeah, you can try. But, you know, they have a skill set that, that translates for them. So, like, don't, again, you know, don't compare in that sort of space because that's not always fair. You know, work on your decision making. Work on your belonging in the team. Like, if there's someone that you notice in that team that is a little bit of an outsider, find a way to bring them in. Like, that sort of stuff will help get you court time because it's amazing how often, like, I think back to it now, over the years I've had players come up to me and say, hey, you're underplaying that kid. Like, you need to give them more minutes. Like, we're better when they're on the court. And it might be something I've missed or for whatever reason, like, it just doesn't resonate with me. And it's like, well, okay, if that's one of my best couple of players telling me that we need to play that kid more, why wouldn't I?
Yeah.
Like, you've got to listen to that as well. They obviously see or feel something that I don't. That's fine. Now I've got to look a little bit deeper.
Absolutely.
And not easy to do. But, you know, it's just accumulate days of doing the right stuff. That's the big thing. You know, it's find ways to do the right thing when nobody's watching. Because usually there will be someone watching eventually. And it'll be, hey, this kid's progressed. Like, we need to have a genuine look at this kid because they've come a long way from where they were.
Yeah, I guarantee you John Brown didn't just become John Brown now. You know what I mean? Yeah. Like, he would have done the work all his life to be that person, right? And that's why everyone loves him and wants him on the team, and Phoenix are, like, very keen on him and stuff like that as well. Like, and what does he do? He rebounds, boxes out in rebounds.
Defends, runs lanes.
Hey, can you play the three? Yep. Hey, can you play the four? Yep. Hey, can you play the five? Yep. Like, there's the, you know, and he'll defend. He doesn't care if he catches the ball or not. Like, he's just a good person.
Yeah. We have a country athlete who has a brilliant story, and I love hearing stories where the athlete has got, come from, like, a resilience, sort of story. He was a cold athlete from a diverse background, getting too tall for soccer. Again, soccer. And
football, we call it, mate. Sorry, world game.
Oh, should know that being Fernando. And went to a club rep tryout, top age 16s, and got instantly cut the first tryout. And his father asked him, what are you going to do? You're going to go back to soccer? And he said, no, I'm just going to train for the whole year. Like, I'm just going to dedicate my whole year to just training and I'll get back into the club land. As that was happening, he got identified. Again, like, if you're good enough, you will be identified. And yeah, next thing you know, he's within a ones team, his first ones team, and then now he's in a state team. Like, that was his decision to say, no, I can go back to soccer because maybe that's the easy route, or I'm just going to work and work and work. And he sort of flew under the radar, and it almost helped him. It's happened to a couple kids as well, where they fly under the radar a bit. And when, you know, when you are identifying talent and you don't know of the person, it intrigues you a little bit more to know more, rather than the kid you that you have seen and you know that maybe their body language or their attitude isn't as great. And probably the last note, when you say, like, when you look at, you know, body language and behavior, we had a CMC emergency spot up for grabs, and we were going down the list, and I just remember this one guard who was just energetic, like, could not get him off the court for demos, was always on the demos and dialed in and knew exactly what we were doing. And, yeah, he was a call-up. He was a call-up from an energetic point of view, but also he wasn't going to weaken the team at all. If anything, he was going to add value and help the LTAD kids out. So it's really crucial to making sure you're, if at at best, providing energy and being a good teammate.
Yep, I really like it. That hopefully gives everyone a little bit of an overview as to what the patient side of coaching and playing can look like potentially. Everyone's going to have different scenarios, obviously, and so we can't talk to all of them, but that gives a little bit of insight as to what it's going to look like. But we'll jump into the social assist.
Something to post on Facebook. Let's go.
It's like me on Twitter.
So as I mentioned earlier, a little bit of a cricket theme on this one, a little bit of swearing in this one, stick with it. Stuart Broad and Justin Langer having a little bit of a chat after one of the Ashes games this year.
And the coaching-wise, you'd think, are there certain things as a coach you can do to instill, I don't want to say the word discipline, or but game awareness?
Why don't you say the word discipline? It's like technique. I don't understand. Yeah. I don't, when people say, oh, we don't want to say discipline. All discipline is choice.
Yeah.
That's all it is. Discipline doesn't mean going meditating in the Himalayas and sit under ice cold water or eat lettuce leaves or no, that's not discipline. Discipline is just the choices you make. Discipline, the choices you make in the middle. Joe Root has scored the second most runs in, and I'd say, I don't know Joe. I've never seen him. I've heard about his training practices, but in the middle, he is so disciplined. Jacob Bethel, as a 22-year-old, was so disciplined in the way he played this game. Scott Boland is so disciplined the way he plays his cricket. Mitchell Starc is so disciplined the way he plays his cricket. So I don't know when people say, oh, we don't want to say, why? Because we're going to put the players off? It's the biggest load of frog shit I've ever heard in my life.
Bang on, though. Like, and links into the topic we're just talking about, which is literally do the right thing when the people aren't watching. Mm-hmm. And for mine, that is discipline. Like, that's the easy thing to do is to do what you want to do whenever you want to do it. The hard thing to do is, look, this is going to make us worse for a little bit, or this is work I don't necessarily want to do. You know, those types of things, they're the real key moments. And the discipline to go and get your form shots, or the discipline to go and shoot the extra free throws, the discipline to carry a hand on every closeout. It's amazing how often that works.
Yeah.
Mm. And it's funny because I think we've gone a little bit away from that, and they talk about it a little bit as you go further into the clip. We almost don't want to be too disciplined because that's not fun for players.
Mm. Yeah.
It's like not everything has to be fun. Like, yes, it should be the center of what we do. We should enjoy it and those sorts of things, but not everything has to be fun. Sometimes we have to do the stuff that sucks.
Yeah.
But that's usually on the defensive end in our sport.
Can definitely relate and probably go out of basketball for a second as well. It's actually story time.
Jeez, man, I don't think we've had one this year.
It's been a while. Well, we've only had three episodes.
I just start telling stories without saying it. Yeah, true.
This is more so from, outside of basketball. I was playing under 18s at Keilor, and my mother asked me if I'd done my homework, and I said no because I can't do that to mum. Couldn't lie. And she said, okay, all good. And we went to practice, and we drove 45 minutes to practice under 18s, and we're edging for classics. And that was all that was on my mind, basketball, basketball, basketball. So we rocked up to practice, and she left the car on. And I said, oh, you're not coming out? And she said, no, you're going to go up to coach, and you're going to tell him you can't train tonight because you need to do your homework. And she was not bluffing. And, oh, boy. Went out of the car, acknowledged coach, told him that I couldn't train today because I had to do my homework, and then had to do the walk of shame for the teammates and let them know as well.
Never met her, but I already really like her, by the way.
And
with this story, though, I'm starting to believe Nando's versions of events with Uno. Like, it's discipline. Like, he's done the right thing, hasn't cheated the game at all.
No, and then I guess the only thing, as I was on the way out, coach said, just bring a jumper tomorrow night because you're going to be sitting. I'm like, yeah, no worries. And, like, I was fuming as a player, like fuming the fact that she drove 45 minutes. Like, couldn't have told me, like, really wanted to get the message across being in year 11 and really just making sure the priorities were correct on family first, school second, basketball third. You want to get anywhere near basketball from a, you know, high school or college point of view, you don't get anywhere if you don't have your grades up. And she was always like massive on the school and education, and that was definitely didn't have that moment again, and dialed into my schoolwork and whatnot. But you know, that's just from a discipline point of view, from basketball and school, and even family as well. It's just making sure that your identity isn't always just basketball. You've got to have balance too. So that was. I felt like I should have shared that just with, even last night we had a catch up with the 18 boys, and we celebrated obviously making VC, which is, it needs to be acknowledged, but it's also like we still had training. A lot of them were like, oh, so we got training off? I'm like, no, like we're still training, fellas.
Look at that. The lesson from Mama Nando has gone on for eternity.
We've got homework club Tuesday night. Exactly.
Who's done their homework? I've got one doozy for you.
We actually had a chat pre-season beforehand, our last meeting last year, and said, hey, like, you know, we need to get in the best shape of our lives. Well, we did a bit of a social media challenge where you upload your workout into the group chat, and they all bought into it. And I said, you start on the 29th of December. It was, I believe, mid-December. That night we had the presentation, one of the boys went for a run at night and filmed and said, work starts now, fellas. And they all just sort of went with it. It was pretty cool. But the other thing we really needed to make sure we prioritized was you need to have a hobby outside of basketball. you can't just always have like, and you are got to share your hobby when we come back after phase two. I just put in the chat yesterday and said, hey, fellas, by the way, you have to present your hobbies. It was fascinating to see like how many boys were like, one learnt a new language, one started a new business, one's like said they were juggling, had juggling balls and presented it. Was like awesome. And it just changed the perspective of like our athletes and the chemistry, and also just identifying like there's more to it than just basketball. You need to have a balanced beyond the court. So
like it
in a bit of a tangent there,
but I don't know.
No, really, it was like a good one.
Yeah. Cracking job. Nando, thank you very much for jumping in. Nick, same to you. We will catch everyone again next week.
Thanks for listening to this episode of the Talking Split Podcast. Make sure you like and comment on your favorite podcast platform. And don't forget to share and subscribe so that you never miss an episode.